Golf Smarter number 394, published on July 23, 2013, is brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter.
SmarterPodcasts.com, delivering sound advice.
The advantages of being fitted at your local retail golf store.
This is Golf Smarter, sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome to the Golf Smarter podcast, Nick.
Thank you, Fred.
It's good to have you here.
Glad to be here.
Actually, I'm in your house.
You are.
We're at your place. We're at your place. So many times we've done shows on Golf Smarter talking about the importance of getting fitted for golf clubs. And it really is important to be fitted versus just going, buying something off the rack or your friend having a club and you swing it and say, wow, that's great, and going to buy one. Let's talk about why being fitted can enhance your game.
Well, the best way to segue into that is people come in every day, and the first question or top two questions are they want to know what's the latest technology, what's the best stuff out there, and my clubs are a couple years old. I want the new technology, and as I explain to them, the technology really is in the fitting computers we have. Properly applied in a fitting process, and selecting the right club heads and that. There's a lot of technology out there, but it needs to be applied in a good fitting. And so it's that perception, all the marketing hype between all the different products out there.
And what happens when somebody comes in and says, no, I don't need to be fitted. I know how I play. These are the clubs I've been playing with, but my friend's club is really awesome. I just swung his new white-headed TaylorMade, and I'd got to have that.
Well, that's the beauty of the Golf Mart, is using Tom Michon as an example with his, level 1, 2, 3, 4 fittings. They can come in and do a level 1 fitting. And, yeah, I think I want this. They can take a couple swats at it in the bays if they want. They can run out the door because they're late for a tee time, and they think that's what they want. With our 90-day warranty, it's no big deal. They can take it out, give it a whirl and a hunch, or on one hit with their buddy's driver, or an ad they saw, or watching Mickelson hit 17 the other day with two deep three woods. I sold two of them on Sunday, right after the Open finished. One guy came in and thought he wanted another club, actually, and we played around, and then I pulled that out on a hunch, and he hit that one better, and another guy was watching and said, I want one of those when he's done. And so fit for two of those. So you never know exactly what you're getting. But going back to your question, is that guy can take it out with our 90-day warranty and give it a whirl. If it doesn't work, bring it on back. And we can check the numbers when he comes back, refit him into another driver. Or he can go off on a second hunch if he wants.
Yeah.
So we can do level 1, level 4. We can be incredibly thorough if that's what the customer wants. And we can keep it really simple and rely on our 90-day warranty.
Well, listeners, longtime listeners of Golf Smarter will be familiar with the name Tom Michon, because he's been on the program so many times. And Tom is probably the global spokesperson for custom club fitting and custom club making. And as far as I'm concerned, one of the greatest voices of all time. and you're bordering that right now, but...
bordering what?
The great voice.
No, you have a great voice.
This is a great radio voice. You can't wait to hear this.
I worship Tom Michon as much as you do.
But you know, we need to now kind of separate for what we're doing here, because we haven't really set this up properly, and that is... with all the conversation that we've ever had on the show about getting fitted by a custom club maker, I get the sense from the audience and in talking to people that they're like, I don't want to, go in there and then this guy does custom club making and I'm going to spend a fortune on clubs and whatnot. So I had this thought of, getting fitted at a local retailer, and that's exactly what we're doing right now. And you mentioned the Golf Mart. So I live in Marin County, and we're in San Rafael, California right now. And the Golf Mart is the local retailer for golf in this county. There really is, maybe there's one or two other small stores, but you're associated with Roger Dunn Sports down in Southern California.
Yeah.
Please correct me if I'm wrong. And also the website, I think, is Worldwide Golf.
Yeah, it's Worldwide Golf Shops, and it's four stores, actually. It's Roger Dunn's in Southern California, Golf Mart in Northern and Southern California, Vans in Arizona, and The Golf Warehouse, as opposed to TGW. They're not affiliated with us. But we purchased The Golf Warehouse back east. I think they're in Massachusetts, Connecticut. It's a smaller chain of stores back there as well.
I'm sorry, excuse me for interrupting, but I know that Nick would want to get this information correct. It's actually the Golfer's Warehouse with stores in Connecticut, Rhode Island, and Massachusetts. And you can find all these stores at worldwidegolfshops.com.
Just Google Worldwide Golf Shops and you'll be fine. So then the idea was, what if we talk to somebody who can, and we're in his office, you can tell, what if we talk to somebody who's a club fitter at a retailer, so that, the to me, what I see the big difference is when you get fitted by a custom club maker or a custom fitter, they will say, okay, here are the heads that I have, here are the shafts that I have, I'm going to build you a set of clubs. And you're not really sure about that when you're making that purchase, and I think consumers are concerned about price. I think about having custom things made. Where you come into here, a local retailer, and we're just going to say where you come into the Golf Mart, and which is not to be confused with the Golfer's Mart, which is my website shopping site, but but you come in here, and now all of a sudden I'm looking at Nike, TaylorMade, Ping, Callaway, and I can go on, Mizuno, Titleist, and go on and on and on, TaylorMade, and all these different manufacturers who have spent millions and millions of dollars in R&D, and then and even millions and millions more on advertising. But they, now you have the things that you're familiar with, that you have heard about, you've seen other people play, you've seen it on the tour, you have the choices that you're offering as a retailer, saying, now that you've fitted, here's the club that I think works best for you. And please correct me, is that correct? Or is that the process? And we can talk about the four levels too.
Well, it's, you know, there's being a custom club builder and being a retailer, I like to think of us as a big box pro shop. Because, you know, we're a bigger store, we're not a pro shop, but we have, you know, all the fitting carts. It's not like we're tied down to one company, or a couple of companies whose clubs we sell. And, we've got new stuff, we've got used stuff, we've got all that stuff. When you're a custom club builder, the difficulty you have is they fall into two categories, and you have your home-based ones, and then you have your retail shop ones. And your retailers can sell some of the same brands we do. Many choose not to. But Mizuno will allow a retail custom club builder to have a fitting cart if they have some kind of credentials, experience, and they have a retail store, a brick-and-mortar store, so to speak.
I need a little more definition on a retail club...
custom club builder.
Right.
Yeah, so if they have a retail store...
Oh, if they have their own store, opposed to working out of the garage.
They can actually sell all the same stuff we do.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a crossover there. Here, you know, we rely on the engineering departments and all those millions of dollars of R&D that you spoke about. And we don't have to rely just on Tom Michon or just on Ralph Maltby at Maltby Golf Works or Jim Yeh at Alpha Golf, which are probably the three premium custom club suppliers. They are, you know, just three guys with a lot of experience, especially in Tom Michon and Maltby's case. But when you're dealing with Callaway, when you're dealing with Titleist, you're dealing with Mizuno, all the names you mentioned, then you're dealing with complete R&D departments and several engineers, and that have devote all their time. And the founding philosophy of the owner, the guys that started the company, like Ellie Calloway and Carsten Solheim at Ping, and you have a culture of engineering and innovation that designed and refined cavity back irons over the years. So the neat thing about being in this side of the business as opposed to the custom club side of the business is the choice of club heads, the quality of the choice of club heads. It's really hard for pretty much anybody to compete anymore. Tom Michon, I think, does an excellent job, and Golfworks was purchased by Golf Galaxy, and then they were purchased by, I think, Dick's Sporting Goods. So they've got deep pockets. I'm guessing Tom Michon has an investor or something that gives him the deep pockets, and he's got so much experience. So they can make great club heads, but they're just a couple guys. If you've got a dozen companies and a dozen engineering staffs, and access to patents and legal property rights too, a lot of the stuff and a lot of the stuff that goes on out there, even between the major manufacturers, Hogan, I think, was acquired by Callaway because they violated their undercut cavity patent when they made their comeback with their Apex irons, and they got a cease and desist from Callaway. Funny thing happened a year or two later. Callaway ended up owning them. They couldn't hang. In the component side of the industry, Golfsmith and Hyreco also had clubhead designs that were similar. Callaway got them on. So the difficulty you run into is all of the engineering, legal departments, who owns the patents, who can design what, how do you get around that design, and how do you cleverly, smartly knock off or improve upon a design and make it yours without violating the other company's patents. And all the major manufacturers, it's so neat to be in this side of the business after being a custom club builder, because I can pull all that stuff off the shelf. I don't have to worry about that I can't get that club head next week, for the most part, because it was shut down because it violated somebody's property rights. So just a lot more resource. Actually, in a lot of ways, I have access to more higher quality components from which to design a set of clubs properly than custom club builders do. I don't have 8 hours to spend fitting somebody and meticulously putting it together to the nth degree, but we can still do a really nice job and with a better quality component, smartly fit, smartly put together, doing the set makeup right. I'm pretty confident I can outfit. I can outfit most club builders. If you went to Tom Michon and got fit, I think he might be able to do a better job than I. But that would all depend. In some categories, like perhaps women golfers, Tom Michon's club heads tend to have higher center gravities. Maltbys have lower center gravities in the custom club world. Callaway and Cobra have always had very low center gravities. So for fitting women and slower swinging seniors and juniors, I've got a lot more club heads to choose from and styles. And people have seen them, and they see players playing that name on TV and winning on Sunday. And, that's a lot of it. A lot of people come in just because there's success out there on tour. And that drives it. And then you get down to the question, what's a good fit for somebody that tour club that player played with, or another club in that manufacturer's line, or perhaps another line altogether. And so a lot of what I do sometimes is try to feel out what the customer wants and then what's best for them, and delicately suggest they try some other clubs and let them see the numbers and the simulators and the ball path and consistency.
And that's a big reason of why I wanted to speak to you, because, the opportunity that you have to have a variety of names to showcase to somebody who says, no, this is the one that Phil was hitting this weekend, so I want that one. And you're like, you know what, for your swing and for all the numbers that we've just determined for you, it might be a good idea to try this, right? You have that opportunity where a lot of custom club makers won't have that.
Yeah, you kind of address the customer and say, yeah, that's a great idea. Let's do that. And then hand them the club, let them try fitting it, or let her try fitting, you know, hitting that club. And then, you know, politely excuse yourself and go over and get the other club that might work better and come back and see how they're hitting. If they're hitting it great, you know, maybe you don't say a word mm-hmm. and your guess was wrong. And if they're struggling a little bit, then you look at the numbers and hand them something that, you know, will likely give them better numbers. And that's going back to the technology. And when we started earlier and fitting, you know, the best technology is finally having access to really good launch monitors at a reasonable price. And it used to be to get a tour level type fitting, you had to find somebody with a $20,000, $30,000 launch monitor, a full Doppler radar and a range. And a lot of custom club fitters, you know, couldn't afford that. I couldn't when I was had my custom club business. But now those prices on those have dropped down. And to be able to have, you know, several simulators like that in studio here and being able to just walk up, hit a few, and the numbers are that accurate and they don't lie. You know, you can pull out select numbers and erase certain numbers. You can make them lie if you want to. But, you know, you don't, there's no reason to do that. It's just, you know, sometimes you have to massage the numbers if somebody's really inconsistent to try to guess what the real numbers are. And oftentimes you have to, you know, massage where people's heads are. And my favorite book that I read right before coming here is Golf is Not a Game of Perfect by Bob Rotella. I reread it right before coming to work here, and it all makes perfect sense. But I found out a couple weeks into working here that by pulling a few ideas out of that book and getting people to have the right swing thoughts before they take a whack in, you know, on the simulator, it makes all the difference in the world. It really is amazing, the mental side of the game.
Oh, I know. And we talk about it a lot. You know, I'm gonna break right here because you gave me the perfect lead in here. Because this episode of the Golf Smarter podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 titles from a wide selection of New York Times bestsellers. And I'm just making this up now. I'm trying to do it from memory. And the Audible would like to give Golf Smarter listeners an opportunity to try their first book for free when they sign up for a brand new account of audible.com at audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. And you just mentioned a book, Golf is Not a Game of Perfect by Dr. Bob Rotella, which before we started, we looked up, and actually it is an hour and a half audiobook, and it's narrated by Dr. Bob Rotella. Give us a little bit more about that book and why you like it so much.
Well, it's really interesting if you just my journey through the book. I got the book years ago. I had heard about it soon after it came out. I'd always meant to get it. Finally got it one Christmas because I asked for it. I forgot who gave it to me. Sat around for a year or two and finally picked it up, read it, and most of it. And it's like a lot of books, self-help books and things like that. You read it, wow, this makes sense. And then you backfile it in your mind. You go out and play golf and do what you do and sort of forget about it. And then I reread it, like I said, a couple months before coming to work back here. And I was thinking of working on my golf game and making some changes. And I picked it up, read through it again. And again, it made a whole lot of sense. And, you know, the mental focus and having the right thoughts and as part of your pre-shot routine, having, you know, your mind calm and relaxing your muscles and taking control of things and visualizing the shot you want to make and believing it and not getting wrapped up in missing a shot and having that drag you away because that affects everything. And again, read it. It was good. Remembered a few more things. Nothing really changed or happened in my game or my life because of that. And then I started working here. And because I'd recently read it while doing fittings on a volume level like we do here, And under time constraints in my business, I could spend 8 hours with somebody. Here, you know, I can spend 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour, sometimes more, or a couple different visits. You know, we can kind of fit according to need that way. But it's really important for, I thought it was really important for me to help customers get their minds calm and be able to hit a couple good shots that I could take and guess were reliable numbers and do a better fitting for them. So I just started to use the stuff in the book. And one of the biggest examples I still remember is when it clicked and I pulled that out of my arsenal and finally used the information. This one gentleman, he's just pumping shots out there. They're all over the place. And finally he cursed and said, "Damn it, I always do that." And he grabbed a golf ball real quick, put it in the tee, and he went to swing again. I go, "Whoa, whoa, 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 stop." He goes, "Why?" Take a breath. Clear your mind. Reboot. What did you just say? "Damn, I always do that." What do you think is going to happen in your next shot? If you're thinking, "Damn, I always do that," and you're going to repeat it. So I said, do a mental reboot. Take a breath.
I call that a mental mulligan, thank you.
A mental mulligan, there you go. And I just told him to, you know, your 12, 15 index, whatever, take a breath, relax, and you know you can hit better than this. And just imagine a target on the mat out there, on the net, and take the club back and swing. I don't want any steering thoughts. I don't want any swing mechanic thoughts. Just swing and trust your muscle memory. And this one's on me. I'm telling you to do it this way. If you totally whack it up, you can blame me. But you've done this before, and just do it. And steal one from Nike. And the guy picked it up and hit a great shot, dead center in the club face, right down the middle. I had all the numbers we needed in that one shot to complete the fitting. And it was really amazing. Just
so you pulled that out of Dr. Bob Rotella.
It was all basically the stuff amazing in his book synthesized into 2 minutes. Well, and it's we brought the books in and we keep selling out of them here. He's
awesome.
He's got two or three or four more since, but that's the first one I read and. The only one I've read, and I just...
Well, that one is available as an audio book. Again, it's Golf is Not a Game of Perfect by Dr. Bob Rotella. And it is yours for free if you sign up for your Audible account today. And again, to do that, or select any book that you'd like, but your first one is free, and that would be at audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. Okay, so during your last answer, you noticed that I was feverishly taking notes on...
I didn't, but now I'm worried.
Yeah, no, I'm taking notes because like, oh, I want to go over that. Oh, I want to go over that. Oh, I want to go over that. I would like to come back to a couple things that you said, but I would, you know, for the time that we have on this episode, just give me a little bit of your background and how you got to be... where you are right now working in a retail location, because you did mention that you had your own custom club fitting business on your own, right? So give me a little history there.
Yeah, it's, I don't know how interesting it is, but the beginning probably...
It enhances your credibility, I think, on this conversation.
Oh, well, so. you haven't heard the history, so let's one step at a time here. But, no, how do I start this? Probably just as a kid driving around San Francisco and biking around Lake Merced, you know, that just...
right near Harding Park.
Yeah. Going through Harding Park, in fact, and driving through Lincoln Park with my folks in the car. Something about...
And looking over at the Olympic Club across the water there going...
I didn't even know what the Olympic Club was back then.
Yeah.
But, you know, there was just something about the golf course. Nobody in my family golfs. Or did at the time. And, something about the golf course, there was an allure. There was this amazing garden.
Yes, there is.
This beautifully landscaped area. And, you know, there seemed to be a certain reverence and a certain, certain structure there that, you know, I just could sense and pick up on it. And it was always sort of interesting and somewhat intimidated because I didn't know what was going on out there exactly. But it just seemed attractive. And then I got too old to play Little League, and thanks to busing and some other initiatives in San Francisco, they were near bankrupt. They had to discontinue sports when I got to junior high. So couldn't play baseball in junior high the first year or two before they figured out how to pay for the busing, and I forget what happened exactly. So year after Little League, Mom signed me up for a couple of John Fry's golf clinics at Harding Park. And
fell in love.
And, yeah, well, clowned around with it a little bit in the summer and bought a couple clubs at GET on Sloat Boulevard in San Francisco and had a 7-iron and a putter and would go to the driving range and go putt. Still never played, but after a couple summers of that.
Wow.
Finally, sort of put together a set, and the real kicker was probably when my buddy snuck me on to San Francisco Club 7th hole. There was a hole in the fence there, and I was hanging out with him in Westlake one day, and we snuck up there with some golf clubs and saw San Francisco Club in all of its glory. The 7th hole, it was just this golf course on steroids. Absolutely, perfectly immaculate. Sand, greens.
So what
turf.
Brought you into club fitting and club making?
Well, immediately I wanted more and started playing more golf and joined the golf team in high school. Even though I wasn't a very good golfer, there weren't that many golfers. It was no problem getting on back then. And started caddying at the San Francisco Club.
Oh, okay.
And did that for...
So this was going to be your life. You just kind of knew that this some way, somehow, you wanted to have this as part of your life.
It was... Awesome. It was fun. The money was good. I was learning the game, and I could play San Francisco Club on Mondays, and just started doing that. Was very lucky to, while there, caddy for Sandy Tatum a couple times.
Wow.
And he, you know, was a fantastic golfer, and he'd miss the Gangsums, and he'd come out in the afternoon, and I'd be the only guy left, and he'd race around the golf course in 2.5 hours after shagging bags because he didn't like driving ranges. And then caddying in a couple of U.S. Open sectional qualifyings or regional, whatever it is. And so on a little bit higher level, that was fun. And then got to work in the pro shop. And the assistant pro there was going through PGA training. And he was becoming quite good at refinishing woodwoods, installing the latest Gamma Fire inserts at the time, reshaping faces, restaining the wood heads, reshafting, doing the whole nine yards.
Awesome.
And I just sat and watched him, went home to my dad's basement and clowned around and picked up a few things and did my own stuff because I was on a budget and couldn't afford to buy Kenneth Smith or the latest, a nice restored copy of, you know, the McGregor woods, which were thought to be the best, or even the Orlemars, Jesse Ortiz's dad's clubs. So kind of put my own together that way, and then realized I wasn't going to make it on tour or
as we all
be that good, and I just kind of got frustrated with the game, got away from it, played it recreationally for 10, 20 years.
Oh, wow.
Working other jobs and raising a family, and got back into it about 15 years ago.
Oh, okay.
And took some classes, read some books, built a driver, built some my first set of custom clubs for myself.
And then the light went off. It's like, I can do this.
Well, when they actually worked better than my old clubs that I'd had since high school, which was an easy feat to do. But you know, just being a bit nuttier and taking the time to do the research.
Awesome. Awesome.
And stumble across some, you know, great resources like Carl great. Smith and Tom Michon and great. Ralph Maltby at Maltby Golf Works and Jeff Summit at Dynacraft and Jim, what's his name? Jim, the head of training at Golf Works, who used to run Cobra's facility.
Right.
So all these great mentors.
Well, listen, we're out of time for this episode, but I'm not done with you. So if we can, could you stick around, or can I stick around with you for a little bit longer and continue the conversation? We'll do a members only episode for next week. All right. Then here's what I'm going to want to do. I'm going to tease this right now. I want to talk a little more about getting club fitted, about the time commitments that you have to put into each customer and the different type of customer based on the quality of their game, whether they're low handicap or high handicap, and who takes more time. But more importantly, what I would like to do is go out onto the show floor here, onto your store floor, and talk to me about the different types of clubs that you sell and what is hot right now, what is going on, what works, what you know, for various type of players, what you like, what you don't like. And if we can just take a tour of the different brand names, I would think that would be really, really interesting.
We can do that.
Awesome. So that's going to be a next episode, Golf Smarter for Members Only. If you're not a member, please join today so that you can hear Nick Manzano and the continuation of this conversation. Plus, you can go back and listen to all those Tom Wishon interviews that he's referring to, and you can hear Tom as well. So, again, Nick, thanks so much for letting me spend some time here at the Golf Mart this morning.
My pleasure.
Unlike most interviews that you hear on Golf Smarter, that conversation with Nick Manzano was recorded this morning. And we were able to complete part two before he had to get back to work. If you found this interesting, or if you're an equipment junkie, you're going to love part two. We spend nearly an hour going through the store discussing irons, grips, shafts, repairs. But mostly, we walk down a 40-foot wall of drivers and discuss the pros and cons of the most popular drivers and manufacturers. His insights were incredibly interesting, and the education that I received was off the charts. So, if you're not a member yet, this could be your tap-in to join Golf Smarter for members only at golfsmarter.com. Please check that out. Now, only a few episodes left until we get to the mountain of number 400, episode number 400. And this weekend, I'm headed to Oregon with some friends for 3.5 rounds at Bandon Dunes Golf Resort. I say half because we're going to open with 9 holes on a course that Fred Shoemaker and his wife Jo says is one of their favorite courses in the entire United States. So while at Bandon, I've scheduled an interview with their director of instruction, Grant Rogers, to discuss what the differences are to play links courses and the mental game that goes along with that style of play. Obviously, after watching the Open Championship at Muirfield, that information is also of value to tour players as well. Also, I'm going to sit down with one of our caddies to hear inside stories from their caddy shack, kind of stuff that I love. And after I leave Bandon, I'm headed to Portland to play around, get a lesson, and sit down for a couple of episodes with our old friend Jim Waldron of the Balance Point Golf School. After this many appearances on the podcast, this will be the first time Jim and I will get to meet. Really looking forward to that. And since I dropped his name a moment ago, I'm really hoping that in celebration of episode number 400, we're going to have a long overdue return of Fred Shoemaker, the incredible Fred Shoemaker of Extraordinary Golf. And one last thing, that's not a Steve Jobs reference. I received this note from John Grun, who was on doing vector putting a while ago. He writes me and says, two of my students, having just returned from their honeymoon, recorded holes in one on successive days on different holes at the course I work at. Now, I know they just got married, but should we tell them that golf and marriage aren't that easy? If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.